This is Self Work, and I'm Dr. Margaret, and today we're going to talk to premier researchers and therapists, Harville Hendricks and his wife, Helen Hunt, about couples work. But first, here are our sponsors. Do you wish you had a healthier diet? Let's be real. Eating healthy can be a hassle. There's shopping and meal prep, and especially if you're trying to manage depression or anxiety, what if there was an easier way and a way for you to be assured you're taking care of your family? Meet Sunbasket, a team of dietitians and chefs that design wholesome, nutritious, and delicious meal kits delivered to your door. Each week, you can choose from a brand new selection of quick and easy meal kit recipes with a wide variety of dietary options, plus dozens, literally dozens, of snacks, salads, breakfast items, and more. I discovered Sunbasket during the pandemic, and was that ever a game changer? Their meal kits are quick and easy, even if you're not a pro in the kitchen. Thanks to Sunbasket's commitment to clean ingredients and organic fresh produce, there's no easier way to eat your very best. So go to sunbasket.com/selfwork today to save $120 across your first four deliveries. That's sunbasket.com/selfwork to save $120 across your first four deliveries, plus free shipping on your first order. This is Self Work, and I'm Dr. Margaret Rutherford. At Self Work, we discuss psychological and emotional issues and what you can do about them, whether that's learning self-acceptance, taking action, or seeking therapy or treatment. 8 years ago, I extended the walls of my practice to reach those of you who might already be knowledgeable about mental health treatment, but also to those of you who might say you'd never darken the door of a therapist. And yet, you are here. I'll answer your questions while I invite you to take a few minutes for your own self-work.
That's empathy. Sympathy, I get it. Yeah, I know you're sad. My dog died and I was so sad too. Right. So my sadness is that we would call sympathy, which I know about you because I'm like you. Mm-hmm. Empathy is I know about you, but I'm not like you.
Welcome to this week's edition of Self-Work. When you're called the couple from hell by your own therapist, that's something to think about. But Harville Hendricks and his wife of several decades, Helen Hunt, took that all in stride. They are the authors of the book, Getting the Love You Want, which sold millions of copies and put them, when it was published in 1988, on the top of the world of relational or couples therapy. In this intriguing interview, they both talk about how working through their own conflict led them to defining the stages that they're now famous for identifying and modeling with their own patients and the many who've read the book. And what's even more refreshing, Harville especially gives credit to his own couples for coming up with the language to ask for what you want. Then Harville took their words and transformed them into concepts like mirroring, validation, and showing empathy, which were new to the field, as most clinicians had only been trained in individual psychotherapy. So at the time, couples work, quote unquote, was mostly parallel psychotherapy, meaning that one of the partners would talk to the therapist and the other would listen, and then the other partner would do the same. It really wasn't very effective. So Harville and Helen were very instrumental in couples finally facing each other and learning to listen to each other in a totally new way. Their new book, How to Talk About Anything with Anyone, reflects their new passion as they teach how to build safety into conversations between all kinds of people, even those that vehemently disagree with one another. They both hope to guide people in how to actually listen and literally talk with anyone about anything. Before we go on, let's hear from our wonderful sponsor, AG1. When AG1 first approached me about sponsoring Self-Work, I of course had to try it. I not only loved it because I could tell an improvement in my overall energy level, I could tell a difference in how my body felt. How even with my busy schedule, I could count on my body doing what it was supposed to do every day. And now there are studies being published showing that what I've been feeling is backed up by science. In one study, 97% of participants felt digestion improved after 90 days of drinking AG1. And in another, the actual composition of the microbes in your gut changed for the better. Add that to the fact that AG1 is in powder form, so it's easier for your body to digest. What good is a supplement if your body can't absorb and use it? So start with AG1 and notice the difference for yourself. It's a great first step to investing in your health, and that's why they've been a proud partner of mine for so long. Try AG1 and get a free bottle of vitamin D3K2 and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first purchase at drinkag1.com/selfwork. That's a $48 value for free if you go to drinkag1.com/selfwork. Check it out. I have to ask you something. We're going to get more to the book, but I've got one more personal question. Oh. You say in the book that y'all were, some therapist called you the couple from hell.
That's the question about how did dialogue emerge and function in our relationship? Mm-hmm. And I think that the start we say in the book was that we were having this huge argument within the first few weeks of our first few dates. It was the end of the first two real dates. We had some sort of before we started dating time together and had this fight and two fights. and both of them, we ended the evening up in Helen's a living room because we were both divorced. So she was living alone with her kids mm-hmm. and I was alone and my kids were alternating back and forth. And when Helen yelled that to stop and one of us talk and then the other one talk, it was that what I'm remembering is that we, that was the request for parallel monologue. We had no language for that. It was like that just stopped us. But I was aware that it calmed me. Something happened to me.
Slowed things down. Mm-hmm.
And you know, I'm a clinician, so you know I've been trained to pay attention to your body and pay attention to all that, and had been doing that long enough that I registered that shifted something, mm-hmm. and it got me curious because I was. Had a clinical practice with couples that I was actually just starting. I hadn't been terribly interested in couples till I got a divorce. Prior to that, I did psychotherapy all the time. And then, and the reason I was out lecturing was I was trying to figure myself out and figure out why in the hell am I divorced? I mean, I'm a professor, I'm teaching marriage and family therapy, and I have a PhD and blah, 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 blah. And I had 16 years of a fairly successful marriage that fell apart, you know, in over a 2-year period. And here's Helen, you know, she's this gorgeous, beautiful woman who's got all kinds of resources, intellectual, physical, and financial. Why is she divorced?
Yeah.
I was trying to figure that out, but I took this calm down to my practice. Mm-hmm. Said I'm going to do something different, which is I'm going to ask the couples because therapy prior to that, and you may know this as a psychologist, couples therapy was I would call it now parallel psychotherapy. Mm-hmm. Peter would talk to me and I would talk to Peter and we would have a conversation and Mary would be listening.
Right.
And then say, okay, Mary, what do you think about what Peter said?
What you just heard. Mm-hmm.
What you just heard. And she would say something, but I wasn't into the dialogue. So I didn't say mirror her back, Peter. I said, it was just the exchange of that. And couples therapy took forever because it was, you know, exploratory on the one hand, to try to get to your childhood background. And second, mm-hmm. it was problem solving and conflict resolution, which was then you move from that exploration to try to get people to go into their cognition and come up with solutions that require thinking and clarity to solve the problem. And the success rate of that was about 35% to 40%.
Yeah.
But it was what I was teaching was the only thing in the discipline at the time. And the one thing, I don't think I often say this, I have never had a course in couples therapy. All the training was in psychotherapy.
Sure.
So you know, that's what I brought into couples therapy. I began to work with couples by turning them, instead of looking at me, turning them to look at each other.
They look at each other.
Instead of Carville having the answer, they have the answer.
Exactly. Exactly. You're not the expert. You are the
I'm the facilitator of
them becoming learning to problem solve.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we got it done and took about probably when Getting was published in 1988, I'd only figured out mirroring. So that was all that was in edition one.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
10 years later, when the second edition came out, I'd figured out validation and empathy.
Yeah.
So full dialogue process is in edition number two. But over that time, I'm on the Oprah show. We're writing these books together. We're growing our knowledge of the dialogue process enough that we can now say there are three steps to it. And beginning to see the value of sentence stems that came also a little later. But Helen and I were not having a great marriage.
The couple from hell, right?
the couple from hell. And so we got to the divorce stage that, you know, we just, in fact, I had to say to Oprah said she was beginning to see me as a regular, mm-hmm. not just once a year, but as a regular. She didn't know what that would mean. But I had to say to her, I'm sorry, I can't come back because Helen and I can't be on national television with a bad marriage. And so she said, oh, okay. Well, when you, how casual she is, well, when you figure it out, call me.
Yeah. And
so we went through this divorce process twice. And I think it's because for two things. One, I'm a cognitive person. It's hard. I can visualize and take concepts and operationalize them, but it's hard to apply them. You know. I think sometimes the more you know about something, the harder it is to integrate it into your life, because it's a cognitive process that has to become behavioral and emotional. And I just wasn't practicing what I was preaching, and Helen got tired of it, and she said, you know, we got to do something. And so we started moving toward divorcing.
But then we tweaked some things and we had a remarriage ceremony, big banquet. We don't say this part, but we do that to say, to be an example.
Sure, to be transparent, to be a model.
Mm-hmm. So that they won't think, well, Helen and Harville can do it. My idiot partner is just so screwed up. And so I like that we will be vulnerable. That nobody's perfect.
So let's take a break and we'll be back in just a moment. Are you feeling overwhelmed by hormonal changes? If you're a woman, you are definitely not alone. There are more than 1,000 hormone disruptors living rent-free in our environment right now, in our food, our water, the air we breathe, the clothes we wear, our skincare, and they all mess with our hormones. Then there's the natural hormonal changes our bodies go through, perimenopause, menopause, and while it's a natural process, it doesn't mean we don't suffer through it. Certainly, perimenopause especially threw me for a loop far before I was expecting it. The good news is that we don't have to suffer through any of it anymore, because now we have Hormone Harmony, a formula made only with herbal ingredients that are shown to reduce hormonal symptoms in women of all ages. In fact, Hormone Harmony has become a phenomenon. Women cannot stop talking about it on social media. A bottle of Hormone Harmony is sold every 24 seconds. That's 50 orders in the time it takes you to listen to Self-Work. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code SELFWORK at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code SELFWORK for 15% off your first order today.
Speaking of empathy, I mean, you in your book, you go through these steps very clearly. It's very easy to follow. because you talk about the problem, which we've already talked about, which is this monologues instead of dialogues, as you said, Helen, and then the focus being on winning. And you talk about the safe dialogue. For one thing, how would you, a lot of people, of course, know what reflective listening is. How would you discern or make distinct what the mirroring, and I don't think there's a lot of validating necessarily in reflective listening, but how would you compare and contrast those?
Well, I think it's the reflective listening is a more generic term.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Somewhere along, I saw the word mirror somewhere. I don't actually know where, but I know that I didn't stop one day and say, I think I'll use the word mirror. But hey, yeah. Somewhere I saw it because I read and saw it somewhere. And also, the other place I remember the word mirror coming up was in working with couples, because I have to give couples credit for teaching me.
Oh, I feel the same
dialogue process.
I feel exactly the same way. I often say to my clients, I feel more like I'm a conduit between previous clients that I have seen and present clients that I see. I'm just passing on the wisdom of other people.
Of one client to another.
Yes, exactly.
So, and it was, what I remember was, it was a couple here in Dallas that I started deliberately experimenting with. And I'm going to experiment, because I turned them this way, and one talked and the other one talked. I think she said, something like, could he sort of mirror back to me what I said? And that moved it out of reflective listening, which is a kind of industry standard word, into something specific. So mirror, like a mirror, she said. So does he see me? Both were smart. Both thought they saw the world accurately and truthfully, and the other one didn't. And so you have to see it my way. And then when you see it my way, you're seeing the truth. And then he said, well, I can mirror it back, but I don't agree with it. And she said, I don't need you to agree with it. I just need you to see it, to see me. Mm-hmm. And I thought, that's interesting.
Sure.
That's not so much cognitive. That's more visceral. Mm-hmm. And he said, well, yeah. And he mirrored her back without much help, accurately, because he wasn't, that disturbed. And I said, what else do you want from him? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And she said, well, I'd like him to ask me, do I have anything else to say? So that developed, is there more?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure.
So she helped me introduce curiosity into the dialogue process, which I had not done. But I was smart enough to pick it up, because when he said, well, do you have anything else to say? I mean, that was not the right sentence to him, but
no,
because usually that statement is, I hope you don't.
Yeah. But, and hurry up. I have something to say myself.
Right. But when we finally got it down, was, is there more about that? And then she went into something way beyond their polarization into her soul, about something that was deep for her and a memory. And you can see him change. Mm-hmm. He's now watching this. And so he mirrors her back accurately, and she, goes deeper. And so he mirrors. So I'm watching this, realizing I'm seeing the creation of something new here. This is not psychotherapy. This is not problem solving. This
is conjoint therapy.
Something else, which we finally call connecting. Mm-hmm. So she was being vulnerable and non-defensive, and he had dropped his defenses and was becoming present and empathic with her. And finally she said, I kept asking her, what else do you want? Yeah. And finally she said, well, I would like to know if he can imagine how I must feel. Can he imagine and see how I'm thinking about this?
And so that's the phrase.
And that was the validation. That was the validation.
That makes sense.
That makes sense.
It doesn't mean I agree. but I can see the sense you're making of it.
Yes.
And she said, I don't want you to agree. I want to know, can you see how my thinking works?
Yeah.
How I would arrive at my conclusion. And he said, oh, well, if I don't have to agree with you, yeah, I think that was very logical. And that does make sense. I can see it, how it makes sense to you.
Yeah.
And so there's where validation showed up. And I thought, because when he said that, she softened more.
Yes.
And then she said, can you imagine how, when something like that happens, how I might feel?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, well, I imagine you must feel really sad. Mm-hmm. And so he was empathic.
Speaking of zero negativity that you were talking about before, and you did, I mean, I remember a couple I worked with years ago, and they were very critical of each other all the time. And they had two children under the age of three, and there was a lot of stress. And so the only assignment I gave them was, you have to ask permission before you criticize. May I say something about the way you're changing the baby's diaper?
Yeah, may I
say something? Right. And they came back. I mean, some of the things they were criticizing each other about were my most minute things. And they came back and they were both laughing. And I said, we had no idea how much we were on each other all the time and criticizing. And it was this huge aha moment for them. And like you, mm-hmm. I learned from them the efficacy of slowing things down and becoming more aware of the process. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's essentially how it was for us. And when we began to integrate zero negativity. Eventually, we got to that concept. Initially, it was, could we get through a day without polarizing?
Okay, so for those people who are listening saying zero negativity, that seems like a goal that is maybe not reachable by a lot of people. And I myself thought, as I was reading about how some conflicts, I mean, if they are handled fairly well, actually lead to an increased amount of trust, because you know you can have this conflict. You know you can. You know that you can really disagree and have to tolerate that discomfort, but then you end up, you know, this person still wants to get up and brush their teeth at the same time you do in the morning, and you feel this connection with them because they keep on choosing you and you keep on choosing them, even though there's disagreement. So how does that fit in with zero?
And let me just throw in one more thing, but everything you said was beautiful. I'll let Harville answer that question. But what we invite couples to do is convert a frustration into a request.
Ah, okay.
Don't tell your partner what you're upset about and don't like. Say, may I have an appointment with you to discuss something that I wish we had handled differently?
Yeah, overs. My husband and I call it overs.
Overs, yeah. Do it over.
A redo.
Yeah. A redo. And I think about, okay, what do I want him to do? So then you make an appointment. Could I have a frustration to share with you something I want? And we found that couples are initially, they wonder, well, what in the world is that going to be? But when they see it as a behavior, and I remember this so well during the developmental stages of this, that they always say, well, yeah, I can do that.
Mm-hmm.
Could we negotiate? And I said, no, you can't negotiate. It has to be what they want. You have to stretch into this behavior, stretch into this.
Mm-hmm.
It is usually something somebody can stretch into or could do naturally.
Sure.
And also, two things that are not concrete, but that are there all the time, is voice tone. Just the anger, you know, if you say something, instead of da 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 da, a voice tone, or the look in someone's eye,
the nonverbal stuff.
Yeah.
And we have two code words when, and it's usually Harville that I find glaring at me, and I go, LL, which means let me look. And for Harville, my voice tone gets irritated sometimes. And I go, Harville, this isn't working. This isn't working. This isn't working. And he doesn't mind hearing about what's not working, but it's VT.
Voice tone.
Change the way you're talking to me. Not what you're talking about, the voice tone. So again, the space between two people is an energy field. And you're impacted by subtle things.
Yeah, you are impacted by subtle things. That's exactly, And I've been a therapist for 35 years. So that's...
Wow.
You know, you make this distinction... Again, that I'd never heard between sympathy being sharing the feelings of others and empathy understanding but not sharing. And I kind of laughed. I thought, so all those people out there who are calling themselves empaths really need to call themselves sympaths because, you know, they tend to say, oh, I get so upset when, you know, or I get sad when somebody else feels sad. But that you're saying that's sympathy. And I'd never thought of empathy being an intention or an act of will. And that's, you make that very clear. And I thought it was really important.
Yeah. And it goes with the construct of differentiation that I am not Helen.
Right.
And Helen's not me. So if our dog dies or her dog dies, I think when we first married, you had the dog. And the dog dies. Helen is sad. I've never had a dog die.
Yeah.
So I don't have a parallel experience. But what empathy is that I can imagine, at least imagine what it must be like to lose a dog. Or I can, if I'm sensitive enough, I can feel Helen's sadness, but I know I'm feeling her sadness. I'm not being sad. I'm not sad. I'm feeling her sadness. There's a resonance. Now, we made sense out of this after we finally got familiar with the quantum field theory, that there's a field of energy here, and Helen's sadness vibrates that feel. And if I'm sensitive enough, I can pick up her feeling. But even if I'm not feeling her feeling, I can imagine her feeling, having not ever lost a dog. That's empathy. Sympathy is, I get it. Yeah, I know you're sad. My dog died and I was so sad too.
Right.
So my sadness is we would call sympathy, which I know about you because I'm like you. Empathy is I know about you, but I'm not like you. So I was living with a social activist whose goal in life was different from mine. Hers was helping equity show up for women. Mine was helping couples connect, but I'd see one couple, you know. How many couples do I have? 30. And Helen had something going in 32 countries.
Yeah.
So I said to Helen, you know, I'm failed to press. I'm going to spend all my life helping clean up the mess, but not prevent the mess. And you're into prevention.
Okay.
If we become empowered, we're going to have a different world. But therapy is not doing upriver prevention. Therapy is doing downriver cleanup. And I thought, well, that's really a bad way to talk because I've written all these books, done all this stuff, trained all these people. And I'm saying it's not really, but it's effective for therapy, but it's not effective for world transformation. And I wanted to be a part, like just feel it, to be a part of social change.
Okay.
Because I also discovered in doing the intake with a couple that their problems had two sources. One was their own personal psychological background and their families.
Yes.
Where your childhood wound is done. But they also lived in a culture of competition, control, domination, and winning in marriage. Marriages embodied that cultural value of, you know, that we have to be the best. You have to have the best marriage. I'm doing this better than you.
You're going to generalize it to dialogue with everyone.
So I began to think like that. And this is it. We put this together to be the flagship of saying, here is how you can use dialogue in all these different ecosystems. And by the way, we have a training program. If you want to become a part of a global social movement, come show up, take our training, and then you can teach it to all of your ecosystem.
Right. And you give examples of how that's been used very effectively. And then there's some mention in the book about how, you know, it's so tragic when that process breaks down. Well, Harville, and of course, Helen, I'm sorry she had to leave, but I so appreciate you talking with me today. Self-work has been, now this is our 9th year.
And, congratulations. Yeah,
so thank you. Thank you. So thank you so much for being on.
Thank you. Thank you. We need a different civilization. We need a different world. We need, I call it moving from verticality to laterality.
Okay.
So we get rid of monologue and monarchy into dialogue and radical democracy. We have a different humanity. And I think we're going in that direction. And we need to get everybody we can headed in that direction.
I hope you're right. Thank you again for being here at Self Work. It was such an honor to interview Harville Hendricks and Helen Hunt. They're a hoot. So I hope you enjoyed their interview with me. I certainly did. Next week, I'll have another Self Work for you. Please feel free to email me at askdrmargaret@drmargaretrutherford.com or send me a voicemail on SpeakPipe. You can do that via the website or your show notes. Again, that website is drmargaretrutherford.com. Again, my gratitude for your presence here as always. Please take care of yourself, your loved ones, and your community. I'm Dr. Margaret, and this has been Self Work.